Thanks to the Man Booker Prize Foundation for supporting RNIB. They've included accessibility in the Booker Prize rules, and they've sponsored production of titles. So RNIB have produced Braille, giant print and talking books of all of this year's and the last 6 years' Booker Prize shortlist. On that shortlist is Richard Flanagan with his book, The Narrow Road to the Deep North. He joined me on the line and told me about the book.
It's a love story, I guess, which spans about 70 years of one man's life from the early 20th century through to the 1990s, and has as its centre one day in a prisoner of war camp on the Death Railway in Thailand in 1943. But I guess it's really a story about love and death, all the great verities, really. It centres on a character called Dorrigo Evans, who's a surgeon who ends up being the leader of a group of POWs, but only because that's what the other men expect of him. He feels himself to be something of a fraud and a sham. And after the war, he's celebrated as a war hero, and he feels ever more false about the accolades that are heaped on him.
Now, tell us about your personal experience of the railway, though.
Well, my father was a survivor of the Death Railway and of being a Japanese prisoner of war for 3.5 years. I guess I grew up as a child of the Death Railway, and I absorbed much, as did I was one of six, as did my brothers and sisters, and you end up carrying strange things within you. And I realised at a certain point that I would have to write a book about those things and try and divine what they meant. And that meant I would have to do it as a novel. The novel's not a fictionalised account of my father's experience, because to come to some understanding of it, to try and understand what it was, I needed to invent a story. And so the characters and the situations are different, although they're informed by my father's experience.
Before you were a novelist, in fact, when you were a child, how aware of your father's past were you?
Well, I always knew he was a prisoner of war, a Japanese prisoner of war. I mean, the book's dedicated to prisoner Sambiyako Sanchigo, which was his Japanese prison number, 335. I learned to count to 10 in Japanese very early on. It was never anything hidden or unsaid. He was unlike many returned ex-POWs who didn't talk about it at all, which seems to have been very common. But I think in truth he talked about it in a certain way, and it was, you know, there were stories of compassion and camaraderie, and that they were tales leavened with a certain pity, but also with great humour. He didn't like what he called the horror stories, but I think when you look at it, you have to admit it was a horrific circumstance that these men found themselves in, working on the Death Railway, which was, you know, one of the great war crimes of the Second World War. Over 250,000 slave labourers building this railway, of whom over 100,000 perished, more corpses than there are words in my book. More corpses than the bomb created at Hiroshima. It was a terrible thing.
Now, knowing what your father went through, was it hard to write the Japanese characters in the book with humanity and sort of sympathy as well?
Well, a lot of people ask me this, Robert, but in truth, perhaps the monsters are closer to us, you know. They weren't so hard, because I think it's always convenient to think evil wears the face of another, but in the end, murder, hate, evil, these things are buried as deeply within the human breast, perhaps even more deeply than love, kindness, goodness. And the truth is, perhaps those things are terribly entwined and difficult to disentangle. And the great crimes of the last 100 years have so often been done not by wicked men or women, but by the very best of people who believe they were that their sense of their own goodness demanded they do things for some supranational or super religious or super political idea of goodness. And at that point, their lives oddly ended up in service of some of the great crimes of our age. That led me to view the Japanese characters not as people very removed from me, but as people very close. I suppose we have to be honest and admit that evil is the face we see in the mirror as much as also as love. Love is.
How was your real life meeting with the equivalent of your character Commander Nakamura with the lizard?
Well, I near the end of the writing of the novel, I went to Japan and I tracked down some of the surviving guards of the Death Railway, and because it was such a vast project, I didn't expect to meet anyone who'd been at my father's camp, but as it turned out, I met three or four of them, including one who'd been the Ivan the Terrible of the camp, a man known to the Australians as the Lizard. And that was a very strange meeting, because I only realised about 5 minutes before I arrived at this meeting in a taxi office in outer suburban Tokyo that this man was in fact the Lizard. He'd changed his name back to his original Korean name rather than the Japanese name that I knew him as. The Lizard, you know, a man who was sentenced to death for war crimes at war's end, had it commuted to a life sentence and then was released in the general amnesty in 56, was now a genial, gentle and gracious old man who endeavoured as best he could to answer my questions over an hour and a half or so. And finally, for reasons I still don't fully understand, I asked him if he would slap me. Slapping was the principal form of punishment in the POW camps, or certainly the most immediate and the most common, a very violent and continuous slapping. And he thought this rightly was a very curious request, but finally he agreed and we stood up. And he knew how to slap, you know. He positioned his body, you know, to get maximum effect. He cupped his hands. He slapped me three times, and on the third slap, the whole room began to sway and shudder and rock. And I thought I was going mad. But in fact, what was happening was that a 7.3 Richter scale earthquake had just hit Tokyo. And as this room swam up and down, I looked at this frightened old man, and I realised wherever evil was, it wasn't in that room with us.
Did your father know about his release in 56, and how did he feel about that?
My father knew he'd escaped punishment. Well, he had a certain period in jail, I guess. He didn't know he was still alive. When I returned to Australia, I told him that I'd met several prison guards, including the Lizard, and that all of them. I said that I didn't think they felt guilt, and I don't think they did. I think guilt is a higher concept, and you know, it's difficult in Japan to feel guilt for many people when the Allies kept the Emperor there as the at the apex of Japanese society, when all these people felt that all their acts were an expression of the Emperor's will, and that the Emperor was this deity who fully expressed the Japanese spirit. But I think they felt something more fundamental, and that was a certain shame, a deep shame. And all of them asked me to passed on apologies for me to pass on to my father. They all said they were sorry for what he and his fellow Australian soldiers had experienced.
Mm.
So I told my father that when I returned, and he was very old by then. He was 98, but his memory was still very good, and his mind was still very sharp. But later that day, he lost all memory of his time in the prisoner of war camps. That was a strange thing, because he retained all memory of life before the war and immediately after the war, and of the war itself, but not of being a POW. And it was, as my sister said, as if he were finally free.
Is the book going to be released in Japan?
Yeah, it will be released in Japan. My books have always been published there, and they have a good following there, and my Japanese translator was a great help to me in writing the book. I think we make a mistake thinking that Japanese people were closed to these stories. It is the case that they haven't been exposed to them that much. But, you know, I encountered great kindness and generosity and interest as I travelled through Japan. And my translator feels, as do other people I know in writing and publishing in Japan, that the book will be well received.
Now, as I said, your book's now available in Braille and in giant print and in audio for everyone. Is it important to you that your book is accessible?
Oh, yeah, completely. That's why I thought it was very sweet when you said that at the beginning, and I hadn't realised. Yeah, books are the great democratic art form, you know. So sometimes you're doing signings and people say, I haven't got a copy of your book, I borrowed it. I'm very sorry to say I borrowed it from a library. But I think that's a beautiful thing, you know, because most art requires you to live in a great centre and have access to money. You need a lot of money to see theatre, to see opera, and to see a movie, to you know, the great art galleries are in the great cities, and to get to them you need money. But books are the great democratic art form. They're available everywhere, the best of them. You can get them for nothing from a library, or people will lend them to you because they're not really worth anything much, not like a great painting or something like that. And the 1 millionth paperback version, or the Braille version, or the print handicap version of my book, or of a great book, is just as valid, just as original, just as unique as the very first edition, the very first, the manuscript as it left the writer's hand. So, I think the more books available to the more people, the better the world is, because novels are one of the great human inventions. It's one of the great traditions we have of understanding ourselves spiritually, intellectually, aesthetically. And I think it's always a, not just a beautiful thing, but a necessary, important thing that they be available to ever more people. I mean, the rise of democracy, the rise of a world that becomes a better place, is linked with the rise of people being able to read.
In his old age, Dorrigo Evans never knew if he had read this or had himself made it up. Made up, mixed up, and broken down. Relentlessly broken down. Rock to gravel to dust to mud to rock. And so the world goes, as his mother used to say when he demanded reasons or explanation as to how the world got to be this way or that. The world is, she would say. It just is, boy.
Richard Flanagan reading from his Booker shortlisted book, The Narrow Road to the Deep North, available now in various formats from RNIB. For more information, head to www.rnib.org.uk/shop.